The following is an AI reading of my blog called Fooled by Features: Why Your Favorite Crypto Project is Unlikely to Succeed, Even if It is Better. It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts, though. So, let's go! I've had several conversations with people about how their favorite cryptocurrency will surpass Bitcoin. And I have often found some of the project's features to be good myself. But before we examine various arguments and why they're unlikely to succeed, let's discuss two technologies that came before crypto. The first technology demonstrates how an inferior technology prevailed due to network effects, while the second example shows how even network effect couldn't save an inferior project. The first technology battle took place in the 1970s. Sony's Betamax was a better video cassette compared to JVC's VHS. It had a smaller container size, higher resolution, and improved picture quality. Nonetheless, the VHS format emerged victorious. Wikipedia explains it this way: the primary deciding factor between Betamax and VHS was the cost of recorders and recording time. Betamax, in theory, has a slightly better recording format than VHS due to resolution, 250 lines vs. 240 lines, slightly superior sound and a more stable image. Betamax recorders were also of higher quality construction. However, these differences were negligible to consumers and thus did not justify either the extra cost of a Betamax VCR, which was often significantly more expensive than a VHS equivalent, or Betamax's shorter recording time, asterisk, a comparison of Betamax top and VHS bottom, photo by Yul Sayer in Bali Timur, CC BY-SA 2.0 Link, JVC, which designed the VHS technology, licensed it to any manufacturer that was interested. The manufacturers then competed against each other for sales, resulting in lower prices to the consumer. In this case, the network effect won, supported by competition and thus higher availability and lower price. If you've lived through the days of sharing movies on videotapes, you would have remembered that with Betamax, you simply wouldn't have succeeded. The standard format was VHS, and Sony was the first on the market with Betamax while being qualitatively superior. But what if someone has already started with the network effect? The second example is MySpace versus Facebook. Both started with a narrow clientele. MySpace's target audience was bands and artists and their fans. Facebook initially specialized in connecting university students on a few campuses. At the time Facebook started, MySpace had a network effect and looked unbeatable. But in this case, higher quality, better user experience, and the chosen method of scaling won out. Is it possible to predict which project will win? When are new features more important than the network effect? And how does this relate to crypto projects? Better Bitcoin, a remnant of Bitcoin's block size battle, was the Bitcoin Cash project, whose philosophy was that people don't want to pay large fees for transactions. And if Bitcoin is to work as peer-to-peer electronic cash system, which was the subtitle of Satoshi's original white paper, this problem has to be solved somehow. A temporary block size limitation has been inserted in the Bitcoin code as a tool to defend against transaction spam. How this ideological battle played out and who was right is not the subject of this article. All that is relevant is that two opinions have emerged in the Bitcoin community on how to address this issue. One opinion was for low fees, where block size doesn't matter. The idea is that computers are powerful enough to keep even large ledgers of transactions. The other opinion argued that recording payments for coffee in a ledger to be maintained on all nodes for all time was not optimal. The second approach emerged as the winner, with Bitcoin Cash being valued at less than 1% of Bitcoin's worth at this time. The demand for affordable transactions is also insignificant in comparison to Bitcoin. The number of processed transactions is notably lower in the long run. While it might be tempting to ridicule Bitcoin Cash supporters for their misguided beliefs, I believe that having a cost-effective transaction system isn't inherently flawed. It's just that we've discovered that the demand for this feature is less than for other attributes of Bitcoin, primarily revolving around branding and network effect. If you were to inquire about cryptocurrencies from someone, they would likely only mention knowing Bitcoin. If they're aware of others, they'd probably struggle to recall a single alternative name, let alone the characteristics or additional information related to those coins. In case cheap transactions are deemed crucial for cryptocurrencies, then, from your perspective, the lesser technology has emerged. Victorious, of course, this environment is dynamic. Bitcoin is also evolving, and payment networks like the Lightning Network are usable, delivering cheap transfer of value despite a somewhat worse user experience. For smart contract platforms, we have a similar dilemma. Ethereum has high fees at the time I write these lines, due to the huge demand for various smart contract services. The number of transactions in Ethereum far exceeds the number of transactions in Bitcoin, even though they are more expensive. In Asunción, Paraguay, I had a coffee with a wonderful person who was Solana maximalist. It was the first and so far the only time I met someone with this philosophy, a person who sold all his bitcoins and bought Solana. His thesis was that Solana scales well, and if we want to replace the financial system with some parallel one, we need to be able to handle a lot of users comparable to systems like Visa, MasterCard, or SEPA. At the time of writing this, purchasing Solana during its hype period as opposed to Bitcoin may not have been the best investment choice. It's possible that Solana will eventually find success, but I believe it's more likely that it won't, even though a parallel financial system will certainly require faster transactions per second. In my view, Solana overlooked the network effect of developers and didn't utilize existing languages for creating smart contracts. Now, let me share some thoughts on what could make for a better Bitcoin. For starters, one issue with Bitcoin is its lack of privacy. The blockchain is quite transparent, allowing anyone to see all transfers taking place. This is where projects like Monero or Zcash come in. They address this very problem. I personally know individuals who were once dedicated supporters of either Monero or Zcash. Isn't better privacy an important feature? In my opinion, it certainly is. From an adoption perspective, the question shouldn't be whether privacy in Bitcoin is inferior to Monero. Instead, we should consider if thousands of users would do their research, find out about another cryptocurrency with better privacy, install a Monero wallet, discover where and how they can purchase Monero, and if they already have some Bitcoins, exchange those for Monero. And will they do this even when looking at a comparison chart of the prices of Monero versus Bitcoin? In this context, Monero has sections where it is being utilized and the number of transactions is increasing. It is popular in dark markets, with some sellers offering lower prices when paying with Monero. This demonstrates an area where privacy genuinely matters. However, will most individuals take the aforementioned steps due to this reason, or will they consider that if no name is directly associated with their Bitcoin address, it's sufficient? Moreover, there's also the privacy aspect of Lightning, which surpasses that of Bitcoin's first layer. Privacy is not the only quality that matters to individuals. I engaged in numerous intriguing conversations with an admirer of the Tezos project. The project claims to offer formally verifiable smart contracts, resulting in better security. If a parallel financial system manages society's wealth, we cannot risk having it hacked and funds stolen from the smart contract every so often. Yet, even this feature did not guarantee success for Tezos. This is noteworthy considering that security vulnerabilities in Ethereum smart contracts are common, leading to monetary losses. Formally verifying code is challenging. We have an entire specialized field in computer science dedicated to it. It's simpler to announce a bug bounty, for instance, through the Hacktrophy project, which I co-founded, and pay for a security audit rather than performing formal verification effectively. And by the way, formal verification doesn't guarantee anything either. It depends on the specification of what we are verifying. Verification is realistically a mathematical proof of correctness, but are we proving the right thing? Another overpromised, undelivered project has been Cardano, originally an academic project that promised in academic publications that it would make virtually everything better. Plenty of academic publications have come out of the Cardano project. Everything is being researched by PhD scientists at universities, and occasionally someone will actually release some code. As with Monero, Tezos, Cardano, and AVAX, these projects claim to have an advantage over bitcoins. Marketing power, network effect, and infrastructure exchanges, ATMs, wallets, education, trust, and so on. The question is whether they can get people to take action by either buying or using this alternative currency or exchanging their existing cryptocurrencies for the new one. While I don't dismiss the possibility of a cryptocurrency emerging that could make such a switch happen, it must bring something truly revolutionary like Facebook did when it rapidly overtook MySpace's user base within months. However, perhaps the existing Bitcoin system is just sufficient for what people need. They may use it because the alternative with new features, whose name they've already forgotten, is only adopted by one person in their community. And then you see a Bitcoin logo on a billboard at a bus stop, used by some exchange or custodian service to promote their services. Of course, there's one more question. What will the majority of people who don't have any cryptocurrencies buy? For example, many of them use stablecoins because they understand what a dollar is and can account for and do economic calculations in it. The concept of flippening plays a role in this debate. That is a situation where another coin takes over Bitcoin's dominant position in terms of market capitalization. This used to be the dream of Bitcoin Cash supporters. If flippening happened, the price of one BCH would be higher than that of one BTC. This would also flip the market capitalization, since the number of BTC and BCH units is roughly the same at any given time. But it strikes me how most people who believe in this scenario imagine it would happen mostly by people selling their bitcoins and buying something else. To me, the most interesting question is, what will those people who don't yet use any cryptocurrencies choose? Let's explore some reasons why your favorite crypto technology might not win. Copycats versus network effect. If something doesn't already have enough network effect, it can be easily copied. A good example of this is the Monero cryptocurrency, which is based on the Crypto Note protocol and its Bitcoin implementation. However, Bitcoin had a problematic feature. 80% of it was already pre-mined by an unknown entity. This means that someone created the initial blocks and received rewards for them. The creators of Monero found this unfair, so they took the technology and built the blockchain from scratch with fair mining and coin distribution in place. As the code was open source, many people decided to switch to a version of the coin that they believed had a more equitable distribution. Other crypto projects face a similar problem, for instance, various better protocols of decentralized exchanges. If they don't have enough liquidity and users yet, it's easy to copy their working principle and give users something extra. That's why even a good idea with good execution can be outcompeted. It's just too easy to copy it before it has enough users, and those users will simply come around to a better implementation. Of course, this topic runs into the general problem of open source software development. The initial development is expensive and difficult, and competitors can take advantage of it and add only their own improvements, which don't cost as much energy and money to develop. The first comers have to bear most of the costs, while the competitors only focus on their competitive advantage. Yet, with Bitcoin, this copying strategy did not help so far. Technologies are evolving, even the cryptocurrency old guy Bitcoin is evolving. Technologies like the Lightning Network, which improves fees, confirmation time finality and privacy, discrete log contracts, and more are coming soon. Launching a competing project such as Monero or Bitcoin Cash is challenging not only in terms of development, but also in marketing and infrastructure. Legacy technology already benefits from existing marketing and infrastructure, which allows it to solve some problems well enough. But what does well enough mean? In this context, it's sufficient to make switching to another solution unappealing. For most people, if paying via the Lightning Network is inexpensive and doesn't create a permanent record on an otherwise transparent blockchain, individuals can handle increased complexity since they can maintain their coins, philosophy, exchange, and often their wallet, which they can top up just like before. Lightning also has some backwards compatibility, so if you're paying a merchant who uses BTC Pay server, scanning a Bitcoin QR code with a Lightning wall, it will result in a Lightning payment. However, if your wall, it doesn't support Lightning, the payment will be made through the classic on-chain method. This illustrates the fundamental flaw of a static worldview. Every technology appears more promising in the developer's dreams, as seen in white papers and marketing materials, compared to what it intends to replace. Reality often differs slightly from these dreams, and by the time we arrive at that point, even the project we aimed to surpass will have improved. While implementing our dream required building from scratch, the existing project only needed to enhance specific aspects where we sought differentiation. An example of this principle can be observed in the Lightning Network, which was introduced in El Salvador. Salvadorans avoid paying high fees, so they use this protocol. Most keep their bitcoins in the Chivo state wallet and only make transfers within it. The other currency in this country is the US dollar. Do people want stablecoins? Since many already have a state wallet, it offers them preservation of the dollar value through a covered short position on a derivatives exchange. They even earn interest from the funding rate. Are people eager for your innovation? Most seasoned entrepreneurs will caution against assuming how customers think. A friend has a restaurant frequented by politicians and businessmen who he thought would prefer Monero due to their focus on privacy. It seems like there's a common misconception. Most individuals don't prioritize privacy, even if they claim otherwise. What truly matters is their actions and the choices they make in the marketplace. Many people complain about surveillance by large corporations and governments, yet when faced with selecting between an encrypted email service that requires payment or a free option offering a more appealing user interface alongside surveillance, they often opt for the latter. Essentially, people's true desires can only be discerned through their actions, not their words alone. For instance, some individuals are willing to pay a $1.30 fee for a decentralized loan on Ethereum, while others might choose an alternative network due to cost concerns. Ultimately, it's crucial to test the preferences of consumers within the market, rather than merely theorizing them. Is there really a demand for formally verified smart contracts, an academically fancy cryptocurrency, an environmentally friendly blockchain, privacy or low transaction fees versus something people already have, know and can use? And even if a given feature, e.g., anonymity is important, can't they get it in any other way than by changing the cryptocurrency they use? You have a really important functionality, but what about the other features? Imagine if what you wanted really turned out to be important cheap transactions with fast confirmation, privacy, and you can deliver, but will you manage to do what other projects have been doing for years? Are you in every cryptocurrency ATM, at the exchanges? Did all the wallets integrate your technology? Does your project need a new wallet, or does the existing one that the user already has work? Developer support. Developer support was once handled perfectly by Microsoft. The text has been converted for audio narration with minimal wording changes. It now reads as follows. It created simple development environments for businesses such as Microsoft Access, Microsoft Excel, Visual Basic and Visual C++. Companies started creating attendance systems, inventory records, or information systems specific to their needs using these tools. And then, switching to other software became nearly impossible. Changing the operating system to Linux always raised the question, and how do we run our existing information system on it? Changing an Office suite often faced obstacles due to compatibility issues with existing Excel macros. Developer support is extremely crucial, as a significant amount of energy goes into development. If you want to start a new DeFi project, would you need someone who already knows Solidity, the programming language for smart contracts developed by the Ethereum project, and can be found relatively easily in the job market, or do you require them to learn Rust or OCaml programming languages? If you decide to change technology, will your smart contract in Rust or OCaml work on another network? Or will you need to develop it again in a different language? For cryptocurrency development, the questions to be answered are similar to those for any other software development. How much of what I want to develop is using libraries, and how much do I really need to create from scratch? Are there numerous open source projects on which developers can build? Is the development adequately documented? Are there examples, tutorials, community on discussion forums? Does anyone provide training? Is there an education or development company in every major city or one per continent? How? Many developers are already familiar with the environment. Does anyone organize hackathons? This is an area where I believe the Bitcoin community, for instance, has much to learn from the Ethereum community. In Ethereum, you can build your project using existing components. The development process in Ethereum is similar to other popular web frameworks. For instance, Truffle creates a scaffold for you, allowing you to import libraries from pre-made packages. You can test, compile, and even deploy your project directly to the main network within the development environment, such as Atom or Visual Studio Code. You also have access to an interactive local block explorer. When creating a token, you only need to focus on programming specific aspects of your project, since other developers have already taken care of the rest. The development environment features code completion and multiple frameworks for unit testing, documentation, debugging, and more. On the other hand, working with Bitcoin is comparatively cumbersome. You interact with Bitcoin and Lightning nodes through a simple API, while anything more complex becomes quite challenging. I believe Bitcoin will improve in this regard, but that's also why, at the time of writing, most of the venture capital flows into Ethereum-based projects rather than Bitcoin. Bitcoin is for institutional hodling, Ethereum is for creating. It's simply quicker and easier to get from idea to functional implementation. But if you're immediately imagining a mythical flippening based on this, the question still remains, and will it be enough and another, and is it more important than other things? The reputation of the hard currency, the Satoshi mythology, the amount of users, the more general acceptance, and the existing infrastructure. What is the product really? If we are talking about which crypto product will win, we should think about what the product represents. And that's mainly in terms of what problem it solves. Bitcoin is hard money. It is also all sorts of other things, e.g. a payment network, decentralized money, a peer-to-peer network for uncensored financial communication, etc. If we have projects that represent faster and cheaper transactions, privacy, preserving financial communication, etc., how well do they compete with Bitcoin in being hard money? The answer to this question is important because crypto projects largely address the parallel financial system, and even the existing financial system is built from basic building blocks. An international unit of account, the dollar, a payment network, cash, Swift, Visa, MasterCard, and so on. Risk mitigation and hedging products, futures, options, insurance contracts, swaps, etc., financial products, loans, and so on. The question that I don't know the answer to is, can Bitcoin remain as the basic building block store of value, and thus hard money, and everything else, privacy, payments, derivatives, security, etc., will be built on other foundations, but using this building block. For example, today I can borrow dollars on Ethereum and use a representation of Bitcoin, like WBTC, as collateral for the loan. Why do I believe this? Because I think it will retain its value more than other cryptocurrencies. This leads to another question about value and price. If I only use the Ethereum network to borrow dollars with Bitcoin as collateral, and all my ETH is used to cover the fees for managing this loan, does Ethereum have a chance of gaining value in the long run? Picture this scenario: you only use dollars to pay the fees for storing gold in a bank vault and transferring ownership of it, i.e., paying with it. In this case, you would use gold for everything else. So, what would a dollar be worth then? Bitcoin doesn't automatically win. Although this text explores common fallacies in various investment theses, mostly revolving around the desperate search for the next Bitcoin, something that can multiply an investor's net worth significantly, it is not a celebration of Bitcoin maximalism. Stacking sats, or desperately hoarding Bitcoins and mocking other uses of the parallel financial system, is a misguided ideology unrelated to why the parallel financial system was created in the first place. As I mentioned earlier, MySpace also had a strong network effect, but ultimately Facebook emerged victorious. In this context, if Bitcoin is comparable to MySpace, predicting what will become the triumphant Facebook that surpasses it is virtually impossible. Very often the reasons are different from what we think, and it's not decided in the dreams of those who create these projects' white papers. nor by profile pictures on social networks, but on the toughest battlefield where people don't actually die the market, because it doesn't matter at all what we think. What matters is what everyone else thinks. There could be many reasons for Bitcoin's eventual failure, and perhaps the most brutal could be a loss of trust. However, Bitcoin can also sleepwalk through time, unresponsive to the needs of its users. Bringing new users changes those needs, because newcomers have different expectations and requirements than the original Bitcoiners. Currently, the choice of cryptocurrency is more about culture than technology. The beauty of code, the elegance of data structures or communication protocols, is understood by only a very small group of users. Decentralization isn't just a simple yes or no decision, and for many projects, alternative cryptocurrencies offer enough decentralization. People often select projects based on their communities. If you're interacting with cypherpunks, suggesting a Bitcoin on-chain transaction might earn you some disapproving looks, as if you were about to undress in public. On the other hand, if you're part of the NFT art enthusiast circle, sharing your story of selling all your home's chairs for more Satoshi may not resonate well. However, if you're committed to scorching the sins of central bankers with your laser-like focus on social media, anything other than Bitcoin might be seen as supporting the opposition. Consequently, a project's success or failure often depends on its cultural impact. Attempting to go against established cultures and network effects is akin to swimming upstream in a river. Some may succeed, but many will eventually tire out. So, a market outcome is often an emergent phenomenon, many little events that add up to create an outcome. It requires significant humility to understand this, especially when we must accept that something very important to us doesn't matter much at all for most people. And that's why your favorite crypto project may not succeed, even if it's Bitcoin. This is a chapter from my forthcoming book, titled Cryptocurrencies Payment Network of the Internet. Keep an eye out. Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.